You know what the good thing is about episode 101? It needs no introduction. I mean, we're all coming down off of episode 100's high.
Yeah.
And this, we're starting from scratch again. The whiteboard is clean, ready for new ideas.
It's clean, but we're vets now. We've earned our keep.
Right.
There's a comfort in what we do now.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a confidence. There's an easiness that we're going to guide this ship home. Once again,
listen to the professionalism. This episode of Bat and Spider, we watched a movie called Death Dimension with Jim Kelly, the Buffalo Bills quarterback from the early 90s. Our friend Yoli, I liked when the pig was stroking his medium-sized turtle so lovingly. I was not a fan of the snapping turtles. Like, yikes. I loved how the title card appeared in German. LOLWTF. That's right, folks. Death Dimension, a pure English movie, features a German title card. Is this the only copy in existence, maybe?
I wonder. I didn't see any Severin logos on this. Though, do you usually see Severin logos? On their streamed movies? I feel like that only happens with Vinegar Syndrome, but because I know they did that. This is directed by Al Adamson. I don't know if this movie, maybe it's not in there actually. Because they put out like a year or two ago an Al Adamson box set.
Right.
I missed out on. But yeah, I don't know if this was in there. I wonder if this was just, this is the last one that's around that anyone has their hands on, but you never know these things, you know, you know, in this world, we now are, witnessing Dale of this, these Blu-ray companies, these things turn, have a habit of turning up.
They do.
But yeah, it was interesting. It was, not a great print. It was German. But yeah, it was Death Dimension.
So we're going to be getting into that at the other side of this episode. Until then, I mean, sometimes we talk about things. So we just talk about, our post-100 come down. Do you have anything to talk about, Chuck? Any video games? Any new cassette tapes?
Yeah, I have a few things on my mind. Video game, do you have the video game sounder? Is that available?
Yeah.
Hold on. Whatever that's, what's that called?
Yeah, I do. Hold on.
I started playing last night a PS4 exclusive, Ghost of Tsushima. Have you heard of this one, Dale?
I've heard of this one. I heard good things about this game.
Yeah. Perhaps well-known in movie circles where you can play the game when you load it up and you're doing your settings before you start the game. Mm-hmm. There's like four modes, and the fourth one is Kurosawa mode, which will let you play the game completely in black and white with like film grain and like scratched film on it, which I held myself back because I wanted to experience it like in color, but I was tempted, but yeah. maybe if I beat it, I'll go turn that on, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it's from what I gather, it started off kind of story heavy, a lot of cutscenes, but you know what? I'm super allergic to cutscenes, but these were not bugging me. It was pretty, the voice acting was good. And it was like pretty minimal. Like you weren't like watching like a fucking character grow up. They're very much, they're good about sort of spacing out that information. Like sometimes when you like get like a, you know, you kill like your fifth Mongol, you'll flash back to you training with your uncle again as a boy, you know, and it's like, and then you'll like learn the lesson of like how to kill a bear or like
how
to do this. So it like, it's really smart, like, cause it's like, it's, you're like getting a new ability, but you're like flashing back to remembering that ability, you know, how you learned it.
Yes.
So it's, yeah, I'm only like an hour or two in, but I'm enjoying the way it's built. It's because I hate storylines. Like, I just want to play the game.
Yeah.
But it's pretty good. And now it's seeming, it's a little more open worldy. It seems like it's sort of like the Ubisoft style. Like there's your main quest and then there's side things and you'll run into like gangs of Mongols. But it's a, I should say, it's a samurai game. And it's, I forget when it takes place, but it's like the situation is the Mongols have invaded Japan and they're basically like, they've, you know, taken over the big cities and the towns and they have their camps. So they're running around. So you're like the last samurai of his tribe.
Oh, gosh.
That's why you're a ghost. Because all your buddies die in the beginning. And so you're like the last one. So you're like trying to like, you know, you're on a quest to like, you know, find your katana and then help your friend. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
So does it seem a little like sim-like where you can like take back over chunks of the map like that?
A little bit, but not, it's, it, I don't think it's driven. That is not your main focus.
Okay.
I think it's more like
it's more story driven.
Yeah. It, like the, it kind of drives you at least for the main thing to like do certain, go to certain places and then do, you know, it'll be a cutscene and then you'll like the one I just did, I hid inside of a sake cart while this sake salesman guy snuck me into a, like a walled city or a walled town that the Mongols were, holed up in. And I had to like help free my friend's brother who was a blacksmith and he's going to build some contraptions.
Oh God. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and I love the combat. It's not too hard for me. It's just simple enough and it's so satisfying. It's so beautiful, Dale. Like,
yeah,
I was just thinking like last year, I was like, man, I, one of my favorite games on PS1 was, Bushido Blade and Bushido Blade 2. Do you remember those games?
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
So I always wanted to like play like a modern, more samurai game. That's just like, you know, no, like, there's no lasers coming out of my sword, just like sword fighting. And this is delivering on that, that, that want. It's pretty great. Yeah. I like it a lot. So yeah. Yeah, that's what I've been dabbling in.
Nice, Chuck. Well, sticking with the theme then, you know, I'm going to go ahead and talk about my video gaming for the past,
Good.
We had gotten back from the beach house and, so I was reunited with my Xbox, and since then, honestly, I kind of tapped the brakes a little bit on Elden Ring, and you know, it's just trying to find my way back to it from being off. I wasn't on the same high that I was because it's frankly, you know, at my suspicions are confirmed that a game that just wallops my ass is not fun for me after a while. Like I would be much better off. And this is totally not taking away from this game or the people who love this game because I can see the appeal. But, you know, just tell me, like, if it would be better for me if I could, if I knew, like, I could go down that cave at level 15 and handle my own, not finding all this out for myself and getting, like, just getting murdered over and over again. But that's me. I know my game style and I know my personality. So, you know, I was driven back into the arms of The Witcher 3, which is a, you know, I have a torrid, incomplete love affair with Witcher because I constantly stop and restart The Witcher. And it's funny because I hold it up there as probably one of my top three or top five games of all time, but I've never even finished it. But what the game does for me and what it does for storytelling and world building is just so, I think, insane to me that I kind of overlook the, you know, the game is not like many others in terms of the way combat is and the way you're like over the shoulder and you're, you know, interacting with townsfolk and stuff like that, but you know, I'm back on my Witcher 3 kick and I love it just because you know, it's set, it's not like it doesn't follow the books, but it's set in the everything from the books is in there. So if you happen to know what the books are about, or if you happen to even watch the show, there's a lot in there that are in there down to, like, you know, the political the political sides of the war that's going on. And, you know, there's a lot left unsaid and unexplained. But if you know what's happening, it's amazing to know that they put that into the game as well, especially when they're not going to explain anything to you. So it's this cool way of, it's a cool game where you can sort of actually role play as a Witcher, because you can constantly take your potions and toxin, and you know your body fights the toxins. But you can role play that to a T if you wanted to. If you wanted to gear up for a fight by taking, you know, a particular potion that might not ever have a reason for existing outside of that fight, but there's like, you know, a million potions that you could conjure, you know, you can concoct to help you, you know, help boost your fight in different ways and stuff like that. And it all exists because that's what a Witcher does, and that's what a Witcher is known for. So that's why
I was going to say that's the witch part. It put the witch in the Witcher, right?
Yeah,
doing it, potions and shit.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't need to. You don't need to do it for the gameplay, but it's there in case you want to do it. And I think it's really, really cool that that's there. You could, you know, legit just like actively role play as a Witcher if you wanted. It's a single player game, so you know, take that for what it's worth. But the fact that it exists is really amazing. And the political aspects and the, you know, some of the quests that you're put on, it's not like win the quest, get the girl, get the prize at the end. It's like, you know, there's like grim consequences for some of the quests, and you know, not everybody's happy all the time, and I, you know, it's like, so I really dig that about the game, because that's what it feels like, you know. As far as I've probably read about half the Witcher books, and you know, it's just like life isn't just happy and grand for a Witcher in the world that the Witcher exists in. So
that's interesting. What I did one little side quest in Ghost of Tsushima, and I encountered a fellow on the road who was running away from his house. And he was like, the Mongols just, my wife and child are back there with the Mongols. They raided my house. And I'm like, you left them there, you twerp? Yeah. And I was like, oh, never mind. I'll go help you. I go there, I kill all the Mongols. And then you have to like search the grounds for his wife and child. But all you find is a blood trail leading into the water.
You're like,
well, geez. I guess they dumped their bodies in there. I better go tell this guy his family's dead. And I was like, wow.
Dang. Okay. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, damn.
That, and now that reminds me, let's stay in the video game segment
okay. For
a little bit longer. Dale, do you know about, this is maybe a movie we should watch for this very podcast.
Oh.
Is the 2001 Witcher movie, aka The Hexer?
I know about this thing? I know about it.
I've seen some of the CGI, and it's... Yeah. That's something we need to dabble in is 2000 CGI, I think.
Low budget
CGI. I think we need to go there someday. But let's just keep that on the shelf there.
Yeah.
I think that's something we could wade into.
Mm.
It's not streaming anywhere, unfortunately, but a lot of half stars.
To the secondary markets.
A lot of half stars.
Oh, geez. Man, these people don't like movies, apparently.
They don't like movies. They've never seen cinema. The Hexer. Let's end the segment, Dale. Thank you.
Great. It's officially over now. Death Dimension.
Do I have to say what this is about now?
Yeah, we're supposed to.
So, okay, there's a scientist, and he creates a bomb. This is not just any bomb, Dale. You might think, oh, this is 1978, it's probably a nuclear bomb or something, H-bomb, any of those things. No. He was trying to make an invention for good. We should say that. We should give him that dignity. He didn't want this thing to be made into a bomb. He made a, but that's what it ended up being. It's a weather bomb, Dale. A weather bomb. Mm. You might ask, well, what's so scary about that?
Chuck?
They show in the beginning, they show exactly what it can do. And it causes an explosion for no reason. But then if you tie up four middle-aged men to posts, they will freeze to death, like basically instantly due to this weather bomb. And then the rest of this movie is just about the plans for the bomb being implanted in a pretty lady's forehead and detectives trying to find her and Oddjob from the James Bond movies trying to find her. And that's it. And there's the... Oh, and Jim Kelly plays a detective and he hurts a lot of people. And we get... I was joking in my head that calling this an alternative title for me was, I forgot now, but something like, cause like, it wasn't just me or like the last 45 minutes was in and out of the villain's waiting room at his house. And it was like, it was like, I don't know. You could call this like waiting room from hell or something, or, you know.
Yeah.
Especially that poor Verdi guy from an undisclosed country who wanted to buy the bomb plant.
Oh, my God. He was the plane.
He was so mad.
He might as well have been trying to buy a new car.
How many times Oddjob went to go speak to the manager? I wouldn't have stood there for that. I would have gotten out of there.
Oh, man. But they got your keys. The problem is they took your keys 2 hours ago to go check out the car for, for appraisal.
They're just, they've got you up on the wall. You're strung up. There's nothing you can do.
This for me was, I can't quite, maybe I can, but it's either a movie with the highest stakes yet pulled off with the lowest ambition, or a movie of the lowest ambition and the highest. Did I just say that? Or the highest ambition but the lowest stakes? Yeah, I think I said that right. I said it the second time right. So it's either like the stakes are either high or incredibly low for this bomb. But really, all this movie is trying to track down the plans for the bomb.
Yeah,
that you see once, and the rest of the movie is spent trying to extract information from the girl after she's found in the final half hour of the movie.
Yeah, I'm no expert, but I feel like they should have gotten it at least to a place at the end where the threat of the bomb going off would have been.
Yeah. Oh my God, I didn't even think of that about that. You're right.
Well, it just came to me as you were saying it, because it was like, yeah, you're right. Like, it's like the only, because there's no bomb. It's just the plans for it. And the bad guys are just trying to sell it to a country to get a lot of money.
That's it.
There's no threat yet of it going off, right?
They still have to
build
it.
And their country, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be probably a South American country. They're just going to like use it for leverage to get favorable trade deals, and they're gonna set it off, you know.
Yeah, and that's the whole movie. I mean, Jim Kelly is just, you made a comment in your letterbox that Jim Kelly's back hurt after filming this movie, and you know what? I didn't, for the longest time, I wasn't believing that in this movie, but in the end, I'm just like, yeah, I think that's. My opinion of it too. Like, George Lazenby, his biggest opponent was he was fighting the American accent the entire time on screen. He was
really, I didn't even think he was trying.
Oh my God, it's like fighting and losing. He was fighting a losing battle, but that's what his biggest nemesis was on screen.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, and you know, Jim Kelly, he's not a great actor, but he was the only one that was holding my attention. Like, when he was on screen, I was like, okay, I'm back in. I'm ready to watch Jim take his shirt off, look at those abs, and he's going to like punch a bad guy like 50 times a second, like Popeye in the stomach.
Yeah, and that then, was like, cool.
Lift up the cuffs of his jeans so he falls on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a little jokey that he was carrying the whole movie, but it's kind of
true.
In the end, you know, that's the part I gravitated to.
And you know, Odd Job Pig, the pig, you know, pig. He
great name, by the way. I was enjoying that name for a villain, the pig. Great.
And I loved his portrayal too. I liked, you know, it was different. He wasn't, I mean, God, they tried to make him like the most menacing thing, and he was like a pussycat on screen. He carried a little baby box turtle around.
Yeah, that was
his medium sized turtle. Sorry, Yuli.
One fight and he'll make you flat chested.
Yeah, that was the other thing was like this had a problem of like, hey, we got two James Bond alums, so let's try and James Bond this up. So like, yeah, like giving Oddjob a turtle instead of like a cat to stroke, like Blofeld. And it was just like, this is dumb. And casting Lazenby as like the police, he wasn't the chief, but he was, I don't know, he was the chief. Yeah, he was the chief, police chief. He was like, you know, Jim Kelly's boss, basically.
Yeah.
But he ended up being a bad guy in the end, so.
He did.
He wasn't like a James Bondy character at all. And how about Odd? Did you notice when I was pulling clips? I noticed the one scene when they go to L.A. and Oddjob's like, the L.A. it's the armpit of the world." But he was wearing his Oddjob hat. That guy stole his hat. You could see the metal under the brim from the Bond movie. I was like, "Oh, that guy.
That's sick."
Kept his hat and. I bet that was like part of the negotiations for him to be in this. Or like, you got the hat, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh yeah, I got the hat. They let me keep it.
The hat. I'll bring it.
They let me keep it. Don't worry.
I do love the balls of him having the name Oddjob in the credits, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess he was able to use that without getting sued.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably just like, this is my lifeline now. If I'm going to do another movie ever or go to a con, I need to be able to use the word Oddjob.
Speaking of that, how about that, like, in his one lair, he had that, like, cartoon caricature of himself?
Yeah.
In the background? That looked like a con signing thing that he had made up.
It did.
You know?
Yeah. Maybe that was his real house.
It might be.
When he went to Reno in the beginning, I'm like, hell yeah, this is like, we're on location. We're in Reno, Nevada, at least for a day of shooting.
Yeah.
But then he arrives at the Mustang, what is the Mustang Bunny Ranch? It can't be called the Mustang Bunny Ranch. It's just called the Mustang Ranch.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God.
Hi, I'm Elaine. Rosemary. Hi, my name is Dawn. I'm EJ. Gail. Christine. Rusty.
And they also show him playing like a game of what's that game that you play in Reno? The slot machine. He does a slot machine.
Yeah,
like, was this just like, Jim, go over there and play slot machine. We'll
was this
it.
Like paid for by the Reno Tourism Board? Like the Mustang Ranch slot
and that
machine?
That long ass shot where you could see all the casinos with like what performers were performing there and stuff. I was like, wow.
With that music. I was into that.
Yeah. I was like, man, I hope this movie stays here in Reno. Cause this is fun to look at.
And then they're like, oh, we heard she's in LA. It's like, okay, bring everything back. Jim, go back to LA.
Oh, but not before he picks up his, 2-bit Bruce Lee.
Oh yeah, his now partner.
Poor guy. What was his name? Myron Bruce Lee was the name he was.
Myron under. Bruce Lee.
I don't know much about this. I know after Bruce Lee died, right, there was a bunch of like other Bruce Lees that came out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And this guy was Myron Bruce Lee. He must be one of these guys.
Oh yeah.
But just getting shown up by Jim Kelly in every fight scene, this guy.
Oh yeah.
Just didn't have it.
I know, Jim. Yeah, this guy was a little twerp. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, he was agile. I'm usually, if I'm in a fighting game or something with a class selection, I'm picking the small, agile guy. But Jim Kelly is just, he was undeniable. A specimen compared to Myron Bruce Lee.
It's like 7 feet tall, but he moves like a...
Like
an agile guy. It's amazing.
The entire time, I just was physically uncomfortable watching him in these felt jumpsuits all movie. I mean, just the sweat and no undershirt.
No. Yeah, and he kept switching tracksuits like throughout it.
Yeah. But when you're a cop, when you're a detective, you can do that. You could do that kind of thing.
And that was okay. So can you clear up? Was Myron Bruce Lee a cop, or was he just his buddy who was helping him out?
I thought he was a cop, but why?
Okay.
You know, when
he was in Reno. He went to Reno, called up his buddy, fake Bruce Lee, and then he's on the case with him. I don't know. I thought he was just, I don't know.
Maybe he just fights for justice.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah. I thought the entire movie was, the first scene I thought was going to set a precedent for this movie with the weird,
great
gory opening. Yeah. With that song against the operation scene.
Yeah. Yeah. We should talk. I wanted to open with this. It opens with this cool, like, it's like jazz/early synth soundtrack kind of.
Yeah.
And you're just watching.
Toby Forsman, you listening to this?
Up close visuals of like a surgeon slicing open a hole in a lady's forehead. It's clearly, it's like a fake skin pasted on a real skin. And then putting in a micro dot.
Yeah.
With the secret plans on it. Under her skin, and then carefully sewing her up. Do you see, that was hilarious when they were using the sewing needle and like, you could tell he was being so careful because it was like any wrong move, they would like, that like latex would just slice, just like fall apart.
Yeah. That like the sewing needle was going to rip through the.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, they got one shot at this. Yeah.
But I was like,
10 minutes.
Cut just, away.
I know.
Just like, just show it going in once and then you can cut away.
They refused to cut away.
This is going on too long.
It was like 6 actual minutes of them. Wiggling this needle and wiggling a scalpel just in place.
But it draws you, like I was like transfixed. I was like, this is, all right, I'm watching this whole thing go down. This is great.
Yeah. Now, if I rescued you in LA and you had a micro dot in your head, okay, what now? Say I have you and I have the micro dot. What now?
Yeah.
What do I do?
Well, luckily, we never got that far. Right?
That's right. That's because they couldn't explain how microdots worked. So,
yeah, he was Ajab was elated when they finally got the microdot out of her head and put it in the little envelope. He's like, finally, we can show this asshole in my waiting room, Verde.
Yeah,
I have the plans. But yeah, Dale, what's a microdot?
I mean, I fully believe it's there's maybe a microchip or like a little piece of memory RAM, but what is it? Do you swipe it?
It just looked like film, right?
Maybe it's film, like little microfiche kind of. I assumed it was electronic, but maybe it's not.
Here we go. Microdot technology involves spraying the body and parts of.
Jesus.
That's not this kind of microdot. Yeah, you can shrink photos down to the size of a period on the end of a sentence. Wow, that's really small. Like the size of the dot in this movie, like you could potentially have like, like 20 photos on there or something. So you could have blueprints of a bomb, I guess, right? Technically on one micro dot.
Yeah, but what do you do? How do you read it? Is it computerized or is it just like a microfiche, like a microscope?
No, it's film.
Oh, it's film.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get micro dots? Can we release the next set of, Bat and Spider podcast album covers in microdot format? My God.
I'll tell you what, I just open up that little rubber thing on my hole puncher. We got a lot of microdots there. We just say they're
microdots. Oh my God. We could just say that they're
$10 a pop,
Jesus.
Oh, gonna say they're pictures of our D's and B's.
Yeah, just flapping around.
Yeah. You need the equipment to blow it up. Sorry, guys. We don't sell that part.
Yeah. You got to go. You got to go to the villain, the super villain of this story.
Yeah. If anyone has any better intel on microdot technology, I'm done Googling it. So,
Bradley Relics, do you know anything? You work in miniature. So we settled that. They have the equipment to obviously blow this microdot back up. Perfect. So did our villain got arrested when they stormed when the LAPD finally arrived to Pig's hideaway, right?
Well, that was part of the ruse. We thought they were arrested. Well, they did. They thought they were arrested, but George Lazenby, the chief of police, was actually in on it. So he helped figure out where the microdot was hidden. So then they cut it out of her. But then Jim Kelly and Myron show up.
Right. Start arresting
and
people.
They start arresting people by, just holding them hostage. Like, yeah. Not like police, but by handcuffing them, but by just right. holding guns on people. And then I guess everyone had fled by then because they didn't even see Ajab, right? They were like, mm-mm. And then they just, that gave way to their chase out to the desert,
right?
I think.
And interestingly enough, Jim left Myron Bruce Lee to fight Lazenby, the final fight.
Oh, that's right.
They did have a fight, but well, not the final fight. That was Myron Bruce Lee's, like that's too, Lazenby's too small of a game bird, I guess, for Jim Kelly.
I don't remember, I blanked this. They had a fight?
They did have a fight, but it wasn't, I mean, it was, he like took him down in a half a second when they first, Jim Kelly like tried to, Jim Kelly rescued the girl and he had to like pull Lazenby off of him and he knocked Lazenby out, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lazenby, he probably wasn't happy about that.
Oh, no, no, you can tell. You can tell. And then, Myron Bruce Lee had to beat him in a fight. He was not happy about that. Lazenby's no. like, what? What? Hello? What?
I'm George Lazenby.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in, what's that movie that we love?
Stargrove.
Stargrove, yeah.
Never Too Young to Die.
I'm going to be in that in like 10 years. So just watch out, buddy.
Yeah. And then the ridiculous chase at the end in 1970s land yachts, huge metal beasts.
Oh man,
that these used to run. Terrifying. Yeah, that used to run the streets in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Insane tonnage underneath of them.
The death count on these beasts.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Couple
just
that.
Human flesh coming in contact with these things.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It'd be like working in a tinfoil factory. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you throw a couple of those in the desert, and it's
just. How about Jim Kelly, like, burning rubber out in there, like, in that hilly area, that off-road area? I was like, there's no way he's going to get up that without scraping the bottom of his car and getting stuck.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's just insane.
Believe it. Yeah. But yeah, out there in the desert. And then what happens? Oh, he kills the guy with the scar on his face. I couldn't figure out if that scar was real or not. Cause that looked real. It was scary.
Yeah, it was. It was scary.
It was like, I think he had like, I don't know if it was a scar or like, tumors on his face. I feel bad. I don't know if they were tumors or not. They okay. sure look like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he that guy was cool. He was the Haitian with he wore the ceremonial rings that would cut people's throats.
Jim Kelly.
And we got that's might have been my favorite. Well, there's two dialogue scenes that I loved in this movie. The first was Jim Kelly telling his stupid boss, George Lazenby, like explaining from the photos how he knows the killer is a Haitian man wearing a ring. And he's like, stay with me. But it's all delivered just so incorrectly for acting. it's just two titans of the screen just going at it over these gruesome crime scene photos. Stay with me, Tom. Come on. And he's like, Haitian how? How do you know he's Haitian?
Yeah, you are right.
Oh, it was great.
I'm American.
And boy, Jim Kelly takes his sweet ass time getting to the end of his point. Just took forever.
Yeah.
Man. But they practiced those lines, Dale. I think it was one shot. But yeah, this guy, he was great, but Jim Kelly beats him, kicks him off a cliff, which was cool. And then finally Jim Kelly has it out with Odd Job with Harold Tanaka, the pig.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was like too short and by this time, like, we were supposed to believe Jim Kelly was like, after mowing down like 50 people in this movie, now he's tired. And so Odd Job just like plays with him like a rag doll.
Yeah.
I mean, there should have been more like back and forth with Jim Kelly. Like, he was too much of a superhero. Like, he should have been getting his ass kicked a little bit more.
Yeah, their physical interaction was just laughable.
Yeah,
I mean, Jim Kelly like hurts him in the nards, and Tanaka and Odd Job like, you know, shuffles a little bit, but then he like, you know, gives it right back to him. Like, he's holding his own.
It's like watching, you know, that movie Step Brothers, and they wrestle on the lawn, you know, Will Ferrell. And...
yeah, it's like, this is it. Like. This is why they're like, the director's like, you know what? Maybe we just have Jim Kelly shoot at a plane as the finale.
Speaking of the director, and also like just the lack of wanting to set up shots was really infuriating for the action, the way they shot the action, because it was just like, you know what, we're just going to shoot this once, guys, and we're going to put the camera in the worst possible place where, and we're going to zoom in on like Jim Kelly's knees.
Yeah.
While all this chaos happens and we're just missing it.
there was one scene where they're getting ready to do a fight scene. And the camera turns on like a second and a half before the scene starts. So they're all like all in place. And then they start like on cue. Yeah. They all start like wildly kicking and punching.
Yeah. And I should say, I mean, if you're in the mood for this, like this is like.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's tops. It's tops, low budget filmmaking, you know, just like, all right, we got it. Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
We got 2 hours to shoot this thing.
Yeah. 2 hours to shoot this thing.
Yeah. But the pig gets away, gets into an airplane. And here I think I was like, okay, there's a lot of time spent watching this airplane land and then pick up the pig and then take back off. And I'm like, all right. It's going to shoot him down. It's going to be spectacular. Like, they paid money to like crash a plane, didn't they? It's going to be awesome. But no, they just, what did they cut to? It looked like,
oh my God. It was
stock footage or something.
Yeah. I mean, the film grain was different. It was like, it's like whatever a magician like sets on fire and goes up immediately. Like,
it was like the smallest explosion. Yeah.
And the thing that sucked is Jim Kelly just uses like a snub nose pistol to shoot the gas tank, I guess, of this plane. It's like, come on.
He was so confident though. Like, once he made that shot, he's like, all right, I'll just wait now. I got it.
Yeah. He's like, I just need to aim my shot
now.
Yeah. Just need to aim it and, you know, we're good.
Yeah.
Another gripe you just made me think of is this whole movie is, you know, a good 15 minutes, if you combine all the scenes, a good 15 minutes are just people asking questions that can't be answered. It's like, I'm looking for General Kelly or General Jones.
Oh,
who is this? It's Catherine. I'm looking for General Jones.
Yes, is the general in?
No, he's not in the office. Can I help you?
When will he be back?
I have no idea. He's in Los Angeles on business.
Oh well, I'm in Los Angeles too.
Yes.
Well, it's very important that I speak with the general. My name is Felicia Roberts.
They asked what this concerns.
Well, it's just very important that I speak with him.
You might try Captain Gallagher of the LAPD. He's working with the General and is in contact with you.
Captain Gallagher. All right, thank you.
Is there any number or address the General can reach you at?
No, I'm sorry. I'll just have to try him again later.
Okay.
Every scene of this movie is like that.
That was possibly my favorite scene, was that phone call scene of her. This actress had a great name. What was her name? Patch McKenzie. She was in like the, she was in a lot of like 70s TV and stuff, but yeah, she's in this, that phone call scene that you just described. Oh. I loved this. It was so insane. Oh yeah. Cause it was like, this is like, you can't write things to be this inane. It was so infuriating to listen to as a phone call. Like, it was like, just like two people not giving enough information and not like saying what they really mean. And it was just her talking to like the general secretary.
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm going to lose my mind here.
There was like four or five different phone calls like that. It's like, why can't people just tell us what they need?
I know.
Why do we have this conversation on film? I mean, it's like me writing a film. This is what real people sound like. Okay. This is what we're trying to capture in the movie. A special shout out to when Patch was tied up in the office and she scooted on over to the phone. The office phone had like one of those old school, like rest the handset on your shoulder so you could talk. Like it was one of those handles mounted to the phone. It was like
fantastic.
Yeah, it was perfect. And that was, I mean, good or bad, I mean, if you got to be in the mood, but it's, you know, it's decent. You got to be in the mood. It's decent if you're in the mood.
for these as these go, it's a bit of a slog. Like it's, because it really, like, not enough. They just didn't have enough ideas for like action pieces. Like they were just like, hey, okay, let's just have Jim and Bruce Lee go here and beat up some goons like for 15 minutes. Like, and it's like, yeah, it's just like alternates between talking scenes and random fighting.
Yeah. Which is a shame
because it's like, I was like, I love the looks. I love the ideas for the characters.
Yeah.
And everyone's cool. I don't care if they can act or not. It's just like, it just needed something else to like,
it did
give it
agree
some gusto.
I agree. And I think, you know, my memory of what I probably only saw Jim Kelly and what Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
So that's my memory of Jim, but I, you know, like I expect, you know, he's not acting his ass off. You know, he's not like acting the shit out of this movie. You know what I mean? He's, you know, he's just doing what he does. He's a kung fu guy.
He was a instructor, I think, that, you know, and they pulled him in to be Enter the Dragon. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a school that they used where he's like teaching the guys, you know?
Yeah.
It probably is his school.
Probably was a school.
Like, hey, Jim, can we shoot here? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Self-defense. I'm teaching a self-defense class.
Yeah.
Which was going too fast. I'm like,
you guys okay?
Yeah. I'm like, slow down. Like, start teaching. Don't just put on an exhibition. You're not at a craft fair. You're teaching
He just beat up his students and then asked if they're okay. It's
like, you signed up for this lesson, remember what I taught
Class you. Class is over. I gotta go talk to this cop who just came in. See you guys. This was released in 1978. It felt older than that. Maybe it was just like how shitty the copy was that we watched, but it felt like 68 to me.
It looked, I mean, it was everything, you know, from Reno and the end was just pea poor colors.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing we got to talk about. Just the injustice of Jim Kelly's lady friend when she gets killed by the Haitian, and the hospital scene, and all the only thing his boss, George Lazenby, can say is like, lousy break. And then they wheel her dead body in.
Yeah.
For Jim Kelly to look at. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Let's give a crap here, people.
Let's lousy give break. Next funeral I go to, I'm going to
Yeah.
Say that to the widow. Lousy break.
They just standing over the coffin. They just nod.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
But it's, you know, it's, I hate shitting on movies because, you know, there's something here. There's something here. It's interesting. It's there's not,
something here.
I wouldn't throw this out in the garbage by any means.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. There's some fun stuff to look at. What now, Dale?
Well, now is when we give out our phone number, which I did not give out in episode 100.
Amateur.
Yeah.
That's right.
We're keeping it together.
Your mailbag. Yeah. Let's go on with that, Dale. How do the people contact us?
People can reach out to batandspiderpod@gmail.com. And also, our official Bat and Spider hotline, 315-544-0966. While I go ahead and bring up these emails, why don't you folks out there remember that we have a website, batandspider.com. We have a Discord server. You can find the invite to that Discord server on batandspider.com. And that's where, you know, really the heart and soul of this podcast lives. Everybody's in there. We're chatting and we're chatting. We also recently started a Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/batandspider.
Yeah. Give us a tip. When you sign up there, you get exclusive episodes to something we're calling the Black Dungeon.
Yep.
Where every once in a while, Dale and I get together with a special guest to talk about a movie. Exclusive on there. Whether you give us $50 every month or $1 one time, you get access to it. No one shall be turned away. And you get special roles in Discord. You get a little castle next to your name and your name in black, which so everyone will be the envy in the Discord and they'll know you're true fucking blue.
Yes. I mean, to see some of these folks with their new Discord roles and icons next to their name, it's nice. It's nice. But
yeah,
no pressure. You don't need to.
No, you really don't need to. Yeah. People are people.
Wow. First time, a long time right here. I can tell you right now, YouTube's Brian Rummel sent us an email.
Oh my gosh. Is this the first time?
This is the first time.
Wow.
Hello, gentlemen. I wanted to pass along my congratulations on your awesome 100th episode. You guys are killing it, and The Hitcher kicks so much ass, and listening to you guys discuss it was a pleasure. Keep up the great work. Sincerely, Brian Rummel. Wow.
Oh, thanks, Bri.
That was amazing. Thanks,
Bri. Can I call him Bri?
Yeah, you probably can. I mean...
Do you call him Bri?
I don't. I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that. Okay. Thanks, Bri. Yeah. I'm glad. I'm so happy we got to. I think we introduced The Hitcher to a few people, which made my heart swell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some people really took to it and they're like, wow, yeah, this is a good movie.
Uh huh. It was amazing. Yeah, because Hitcher is amazing. And the fact that people watched for the first time, hello.
Yeah.
Anyway, check out Brian's YouTube page. He does movie reviews. He does horror news. But he drops a couple of reviews a week, and he keeps them around 6-10 minutes. So, you know, easily digestible. YouTube.com/Brian Rummel.
Nice.
I think that works.
Yeah.
Does it? I can't. I don't know.
Do you want me to look?
No, I don't expect you to. I don't know if, like, YouTube.com/anything works. Maybe it does.
Sorry. Sorry, can you cut that out?
Yeah.
God damn it. Yeah. I know every time either one of us says that.
Yeah, no.
Cut that out. It never gets cut out.
Next up, Hobo Salary.
Oh my God. Bless us, everyone.
Email subject, how about it? Oh, that's clever. I'm writing in a week late because I knew you'd be inundated with congratulatory messages. Happy Hundo, by the way. But I really wanted to talk about The Hitcher. It is a bedrock in my movie viewing history. Mm. Probably among the first dozen horror movies I'd seen by the late 80s, and it made a big impression on me. I must have been around 6 or 7 when I first watched The Hitcher. At that point, I'd already seen Nightmare 3 and 4, Texas Chainsaw 2, and at least one of the Psycho sequels. From the jump, I understood these movies starred fictional characters. I think I probably viewed Freddy and Leatherface much the same as I did Inspector Gadget or Bull Shannon from Night Court. All this to say, Jack Ryder was a different beast. He was so menacing and terrifying. I think he was the first movie villain to really get under my skin. Not a boo haunted house scare, but a sick in the pit of my stomach dread that I couldn't even put words to at that age. Because of that, the movie has always stayed parked in a certain area of my brain. Really happy when you picked it for the episode 100 and I had a reason to revisit it.
God damn, he said it. He said it.
He did.
He said it all. Man. I love when the writer, when the letters writers do our job for us in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, like a summary.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
Whew. Thanks, Hobo. Next up, Jim Connick. I forgot to voicemail. Hey, Chuck and Dale, Black Castle member number one Jim here. Can't neglect you because episode 100 is done. Sitting waiting to go into X, so no voicemail this week. 101's movie was my first Al Adamson, and the lasting impression from it was that I need to see more Jim Kelly movies. I didn't know you could take out a helicopter like that. Cheers, fellas. Love you, Jim. Yeah.
Thanks, Jim. I agree. I'm surprised that's his first Al Adamson, too.
Right?
That's wild. Because Jim's, you know, he's one of our, I mean, I don't want to start any tough guy stuff, but he's one of our most seasoned, I would say, movie watchers.
Yeah, if this were like a movie watching Beyblade tournament, we would put him, we would probably nominate him as our go-to, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean.
I mean, I barely know. I don't know what a Beyblade is, but I've seen that word on the internet. Is it like a Pokemon card game?
It's like more like a pug.
Oh.
Than a card game.
Oh, okay.
If you want to get the brass tacks. Next up, Foxtrot Bebop, RE Death Dimension. Hello, Bat and Spider, Chuck and Dale. I apologize if we were too loud in the Black Castle last night. Me and the ghouls and boils were effed up on the Monster Mash and White Claws and were too excited to not try out the dungeon's swinging chains. Yeah. It was uncomfortable last night. It was Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we'll have to get used to now that we have roommates. But
yeah, it is what it is. We brought it on ourselves.
Now that you're paying rent, what can we do, right?
Yeah. Looking at the credits on Letterboxd for Death Dimension and noticing that many of the crew have these witness protection alliterative names, Al Adamson, Harry Hope, and Gary Graver, and I don't know, makes the whole production feel even more like some backdoor money scheme or con job. Could easily imagine the special effects work here were elaborate jobs to destroy potential evidence, like hiding drugs or documents in either the car or helicopter that were blown to hell. Weird flick and really enjoyed it. If you didn't notice the castle ruckus last night, I'm sorry in advance, but I can't play the Monster Mash loud enough. Addendum, LOL, it was the plane that was blown up, I think, ? Or at least it looked like burning fuselage that dropped from sky into the desert. God, I would have never, like, how sick now that I'm like, was this, like, somebody is destroying evidence by making a movie? Man, what is Foxtrot thinking? Like, what kind of a mind space?
Like, did they really freeze those middle-aged men to death and then bury them in the desert? I was hooting and hollering. That made me laugh out loud. Just for some reason, the shot of those poor saps tied up to posts and then you just see the very extreme close-up on the red button on the metal box that a finger pushes and then... An explosion happens for no reason, and then they just freeze to death, like the X-Men storm just came in.
What was the term they used? Like literal zero, or it's not? It was
Absolute zero. Absolute. Like it got to absolute zero.
Like, oh man, that's even more.
Wow, that's cold.
Yeah, that is. That
was like really cold.
Those people tied to that were freezing.
They just look like they found some like grandparents in a park, you know. Tied them up.
Okay. Last one. Email. Voicemail. Chuck Dales. Whom ripped off whom? Audio provided by the BCA, Black Castle Intelligence Agency.
BCIA, you mean?
BCI. Is that what I said? What I said?
You said BCA.
I messed it up, and I'm.
I mean, you didn't write this. Oh, okay.
I read it wrong, and I'm happy.
Oh, you're reading. Okay. You read it wrong. Sorry.
I'm happy. Do you know what you guys went ahead and did? You've made this amazing, wonderful podcast that has enhanced my life to no end. And you know what? It has genuinely changed the way I think about films.
You know what? Has really genuinely changed the way that I think about films.
And changed the way I watch and consume movies.
It's been amazing.
And I'm going to say that it's changed my life.
Oh,
and I'm not even kidding.
Really.
It's changed my life for the better. Movies like Blood Rage and Female Trouble. And Siege and Wolf Guy. I just love them.
I just love them.
The journey that you guys started, I'm on board with, and you have my heart, and I thank you so much. Thank you for creating this safe space in the Discord and bringing everyone together, even me. I love you, and I can't wait for more. Kablasto, you plagiarizing piece of crap. Okay.
What?
This is between you and God at this point. I can't believe. You know what? And you're holding it up. You're holding against us for not knowing, for not realizing that you plagiarized a Dark Feel Good of all people. This is not part of the recording. This is actually us talking.
I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like anything. I felt
it didn't sit well. Doesn't sit well. Chuck's so pissed right now. He can't even speak without stammering.
I'm gonna start cutting open my forehead and shoving micro dots under my skin.
It's the only way.
Just to feel something other than this feeling.
Just feel escapism.
Yeah. Because movies don't work anymore because they've been tainted.
Way to go.
And that's the last. Is that the last voicemail?
That is, unfortunately, yeah.
God,
that last one.
That's great. This is great. I'm glad we get to end on this note.
Yeah.
Once again. People are people.
But what we need to do is pick next week's movie, Chuck. If this podcast is still a thing in 7 days, then we need a movie to watch.
And it's my turn, so give me a minute.
The BCIA might.
Okay.
It is time to announce next week's movie.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. I have consulted the runes, and I have come up with a movie title for us to watch. My reasoning is, so there's a film director named Larry Cohen, whom a lot of people I like his movies. And I the ones I've seen, I haven't really taken to.
Right.
I'm gonna stick with took into. But there's one, this must be earlier in his career. I'm going to make us watch 1972's Bone. B-O-N-E. That's it. Bone. Directed by Larry Cohen. Starring Yaphet Kotto, who rules. It's available on Tubi, which is another plus. And also the scores of some of the people that I follow on Letterboxd, the scores are very high. Okay?
Okay. Wow. A thief breaks into the home of a wealthy, happily married Beverly Hills couple. He soon finds out, though, that the couple is neither as wealthy as he thought, or they were not as happily married as they appeared.
Tagline, love Bone before he loves you. Let's describe the post. It's like a black and white drawing of Yaphet Kotto wearing jeans and a shirt, and he's holding a rat in his hand. It's a live rat.
He's holding a rat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I skimmed some of the reviews here, and I'm intrigued. I feel like an open book day. I feel like my nerves are open and ready to take anything.
This is what we need. This is what we needed for episode 102.
This is going to be, I think this might be a shot in the arm, God willing.
The most famous Larry Cohen that I even knew about was Cue the Winged Serpent. And I don't think I'd seen any. I haven't seen that. He did Return to Salem's Lot, which is just on another level altogether. Bananas.
I mean, it's a masterpiece, but it's a certain type of masterpiece.
Yeah.
Man, we gotta do that movie for the pod.
It's, oh my God.
Maybe for Black Dungeon, we gotta get like the world's biggest Salem's Lot fan or something. Make them watch that with us.
The world's biggest Salem's Lot fan that hasn't seen Return to Salem's Lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I've seen the stuff. I've seen special effects. Man, I wanted to love special effects because it's got my girl in it, Zoe Lund.
Oh.
From Ms. 45.
Yeah.
I don't know. I should revisit it because people I respect love that movie. And I don't know. It's maybe I just wasn't in the mood. I don't know. But yeah, Larry Cohen. I'm determined to figure this guy out because he was, rest in peace. He died a couple of years back, but he was a fixture in this melange of movie soup we swim in. And I feel like I should know him more.
Let's do this for Larry.
Let's do it for Larry. So everyone fire up your Tubi accounts and watch Bone with us for next week. That's it.
That's it. Batandspider.com, Ko-fi.com/batandspider. Join our Discord, buy a t-shirt, buy a sticker. And you know what? Leave us ratings and reviews in Spotify, iTunes, all that. That still matters. And it's kind of a pain in the ass. We completely understand. But if you get a chance, just do that. It helps with visibility of the show. And, it's time we start taking this to the next level. You know, we got it. We got to take this to the next level.
Yeah. You got a dentist appointment this week. Maybe tell your hygienist about us, or your doctor, the dentist. Be like, hey, I listened to this pretty interesting show you might be into, Give them the Dr. Giggles episode.
Sure. That's what's going to land them. If you see somebody with a Witcher 3 tattoo, then tell them about this episode right here. that'd be cool.
Hey, if you have someone in your life, someone that you're going to bother, get services from, and you want us to match them up with a Bat and Spider episode, write in, let us know, and we'll get to work on that.
we'll do our damnedest.
Yeah. All right. We got to end this deal.
We got to get out of here.
I'm so sorry.
This is insane. Until next week then, Chuck, you're the best.
Yeah. Let's get out of here. Bye. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.